with a whole lot of truth. Remedy Revolution is here for you.
Ooh. And now here's your host, Aaron Page.
All interviews presented on the Remedy Revolution podcast are designed to provide information and inspiration only. Guests of the podcast may present opinions and anecdotes which are solely their own. And as always, before beginning any treatment protocol, please consult with your preferred medical provider. Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Remedy Revolution podcast. My name is Erin, and today I have somebody who I think is going to help lots of the moms out there who are struggling with various issues with the pelvic floor, things that they've dealt with since perhaps a pregnancy, things that they might be dealing with during pregnancy, and then those of us that are struggling in my category in the perimenopausal and menopausal world. I'm very happy to bring on Nicole Laird. She's a physical therapist at Hays County Physical Therapy. Nicole, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Erin.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit. I always like to start off asking people about their stories. So what led you into this kind of work? Were you always a physical therapist, and did you kind of stumble upon this, or was it something that you were passionate about from day one?
So it's interesting because I went to physical therapy school thinking that I was going to work with athletes. I think a lot of us go into the physical therapy profession with that mindset. I worked in hospital settings. I worked in pediatrics for about 5 years before I had my first son. And that's sort of what triggered the shift into women's health. I've always worked with women since before I went to PT school. I worked in health and fitness, did some personal training with a lot of female clients. So there's always been a little bit of a passion there, but there was something about that transition into motherhood for me that just made me go, okay, let's dive into this a little bit more. Quite honestly, when I was in PT school, we talked about pelvic health for a fraction of a second, it felt like. And I thought, I'm never doing that. Never, ever. Of course, they say never say never. So I had my oldest son. He's almost 8. And I went back to my 6-week checkup, like a lot of us do, was told to ease back into everything. And so I did. I eased back into my fitness routine. My physician did not ask me what my fitness routine looked like. And so I had been doing some pretty heavy weightlifting, CrossFit style workouts for years. And so I eased back into it thinking, I know what I'm doing. I'm a physical therapist. I've got this. And just the mindset shift that I had to make in that postpartum recovery phase was so huge. And I felt a little bit lost, even with the knowledge and education that I have. Still had some, it was minor issues, minor injuries, but it was enough to take me out of my something that I loved and something that was a huge stress relief for me for short periods at a time. And I thought, man, if I'm going through this as somebody who has this education, this knowledge, this background, I understand human movement, I understand tissue healing time, what's happening to women who don't have that background? Like, this is unacceptable to me. And so that's where I started to get a little more in depth in the women's health and started looking at, okay, what can we start doing? Went to one of my first specialized training courses and thought, okay, this is either going to be nice to know, and we'll just put that in with all the other things that I have in my continuing knowledge base, or this is going to be something that I need to do. And it was one of those moments in my career that it just sort of shifted everything for me. And that's when I decided to start my own practice, and I stepped into women's health wholeheartedly. And the passion has only grown from there, and helping educate women on the things that we've sort of just chalked up as, this is just part of being a woman or part of getting older. And it doesn't have to be. And I want to, like, my biggest mission and passion is to help empower and educate women that, you know, your body can do so much more and different, and you can be in control of your body again. So that's kind of my journey.
Absolutely. You know, I think there's so much that's taboo with regard to postpartum in particular. Most of the time, as a new mother going into childbirth, there's not a lot of conversations around what happens postpartum. And so women are kind of left flailing until we kind of enter the sisterhood, if you will, and start having those conversations with other moms. And I feel like it really shouldn't be that way. We really should know what we're going into and how to help ourselves heal after the pregnancy, after the birth. You know, I have a personal story that I don't think I've ever shared on the podcast, but after my son was born, 16 and a half years ago, almost 17 years ago, I had some major challenges. Now, as a new mom, I did not realize that those were challenges. I thought it was just the normal progression of healing, that maybe I was a little bit slower to heal. Until I finally brought it up to my midwife, I said, you know, I'm really struggling. I saw her at the grocery store. I would not have had that conversation with her otherwise, and I would have gone on thinking that this was normal. However, I went in for an exam and found out that I had actually developed a golf ball sized tumor that needed to be removed. So at one of my suture sites. So these kinds of things occur on a regular basis. They're very common, but women don't know that they're common. And so they expect that this is just normal because we don't have those conversations. So how important is it educating your patients, particularly during the pregnancy, so that they know what to expect postpartum and even further down the line as their hormones start to shift and change as they get older?
So one of the biggest things that we like to do in our sessions, or that we really pride ourselves on, is really giving the power to our patients and educating them on what to expect, what could happen, what might happen, and what is inside the realm of normal or typical healing time, and what is kind of outside of that, and when do you need to look for alternative support. And, you know, I think what I love is when I have clients who start to educate themselves either pre-pregnancy, preconception, and come to see us in that early stages of pregnancy, so we can guide them through what does movement look like, what does exercise look like, what is your nutrition, what is health, what is sleep, what is all that, how does that play into the progression through pregnancy, because your hormones do all kinds of crazy things, your body does all kinds of really cool and awesome and powerful things as we grow tiny human beings. But being prepared for that labor, delivery, and postpartum recovery phase, I think we kind of forget about that until, I think especially with your first pregnancy, your first child, you don't know what to expect. And so I think there's a little bit of, dare I say, naivety, that we're like, well, I think it's not going to be like everyone else says it is, because I'm different, but our bodies do a certain things. And so giving women the understanding of, here's what you should expect. And then also being prepared for that postpartum recovery, because I think there's this expectation that we bounce back, and we also have to honor that healing time and give women tools to understand what does it look like to recover. I'd like to see our clients at 3 to 4 weeks postpartum, so that we can start to have those conversations about what does movement look like? What does your body healing time look like? What else do you need to include in this postpartum recovery, so you can get back to working out, lifting, running, jumping, all of the things you want to do at that 6 to 12 to so on postpartum phase? Because I think there has been this mentality that 6 week mark is this magic number, that everything goes back to normal, goes back to the pre-pregnancy stage. And that's not really the reality of how our bodies go through a healing process. Plus, your sleep is all over the place. Your nutrition is probably all over the place. Let's be really honest there. You're adjusting to an entirely new schedule. And so helping women understand what that might look like, and when, like I said, when to seek additional support and what that might look like. And I'm grateful. I work with a lot of clients who are working with midwives, have doulas on board. And so they tend to have that 3 to 5 day postpartum checkup, that 2 to 3 week checkup, and then the 6 weeks. So at least they've got a little more support along the way. But some of our clients that are working with their OBGYNs, they might have a phone call at 2 weeks and then they've got a 6 week checkup or 8 week checkup. But mentally, most of my patients are ready to get back to moving at 3 to 4 weeks postpartum, but are so terrified to move because what if I do something wrong? So my number one is giving the knowledge and education to help women understand what their body might be going through and how to support their bodies through that. And not just with movement, but we also talk sleep and nutrition and hydration because all of that plays into how our bodies heal. So I know that was a long-winded answer to how we educate our patients, but that it's so important to me that we partner with our patients and give and walk alongside them on this journey because everyone's going to look a little different. And I want them to have the confidence to step into this new phase of life because it's awesome and can be really fun and also really overwhelming and exciting all in the same breath. So being there as that support system for them is really important, and education is number one for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, the joke, if you will, with new moms is always, the jumping on the trampoline kind of conversation. And that's really the extent of those types of conversations. Women will say, "Oh yeah, I can't jump on the trampoline." And we all kind of giggle to ourselves because we all know exactly why. For those men who might be listening, there's a loss of bladder control for a lot of women postpartum, that sometimes, bounces back rather easily, and other times it does not. And it does take some work to kind of regain that pelvic floor strength in order to stop that from happening, particularly when you have young kids who like to run and jump and do those kinds of things. So, what are some tips you might be able to offer for those women who, perhaps feel pretty good in their body, but do still have some of that bladder control loss? Or is there something they can be doing on a daily basis to rectify that issue?
So one of the biggest things that we start with all of our patients is looking at breathing mechanics, and looking at what is the rib cage doing, what is the diaphragm doing, because that affects the way the pelvic floor muscles move. And so number one thing is what are your breathing mechanics look like? And then also we love to blame the pelvic floor for all of the things, but there's so much that goes into the pelvis, the hip muscles, the core muscles, all play in together. And so I think really paying attention to, are you pulling your breath here up into the chest, up into the shoulders, the neck? A lot of us tend to pull our breath up high into the neck, the shoulders when we are in a heightened stressed state. Can you pull the breath back down into the rib cage and the belly? Because that's going to help the pelvic floor muscles move in the way that they need to move to function in their full capacity. And then, are you able to relax and contract the pelvic floor? I think a lot of times we think bladder leaking is only due to the weak, loose, poorly activated pelvic floor muscles. But a lot of times, what I see in clinic is the opposite tends to be true, is those muscles tend to sit in such a heightened state of contraction. They're so tight that they can't react in the way that they need to when there is a change in that pressure. So when we're jumping, when we're laughing, when we're coughing, when we're sneezing, there's a quick change in pressure in the abdominal cavity. And so if those muscles can't respond in the way that they need to fast enough and stretch and they relax and contract quickly, then that's when we start to get some of that little bit of leaking or discomfort that a lot of my clients have. So I think making sure that your hips are moving in a way that feels really good, opening up those hip muscles. So stretching into the hips, breathing mechanics. What does your posture look like? Posture is number one. Posture and breathing are my top tips for anybody who's been dealing with any kind of pelvic floor issues. Because that's sort of the foundation for everything else. And then when you can take that and put that into everything else that you're doing, lifting your kids, chasing after your kids, if you can engage your core and get your breath really, really consistent, then we usually see some really nice changes in the bladder issues that a lot of women are dealing with.
Absolutely. And this might be kind of a out of left field question, but it just made me think about it. I wore my son for a lot of the time, so lots of carrying on the particularly on the front. I wore him, but as he got older, then I switched to rear carrying. But at the same time, I noticed lots of those carriers have a lot of weight placed on the hips. And so I would get a lot of soreness through my hips, and perhaps it had to do with the way I was moving. But maybe you could speak a little bit to that. Is there something that we could be doing, particularly moms that are really wanting to wear their kids, to carry them? Because I know structurally, I used to call it the bucket, the piece of the car seat that you take out and carry around with it with your baby in it, and it's very awkward and actually very difficult to move holding that. And so I always felt like, I was going to mess up my back or something trying to carry that. So I felt like carrying my son was much, much easier, much more ergonomic, but I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
So I love it when our clients do baby wearing because for a number of different reasons, it keeps you that skin to skin, it keeps you close to your baby so you can like co-regulate, which is amazing, especially in that early postpartum phase for both you and baby. But it's also a great way to kind of rebuild core and posture. So the biggest thing when I talk with our patients with using baby wraps or carriers of any structured or more unstructured carriers is let's take a look at what your posture looks like when you're wearing baby. Are you stacked over your midfoot? So like, do you have your weight equally distributed through your feet? Are your knees over your ankles, hips over knees, rib cage stacked over hips, and just kind of going up and down the chain, because that will also help you to engage the core in a different way. And it may be that you get fatigued because those muscles are trying to kind of work again. And when they hit that threshold of, I'm tired, I'm done, you might feel a shift in your posture. But just taking a moment to go, okay, let me just realign maybe every hour or so, depending on how long you're wearing your baby. But just being mindful of what is your body doing in this moment. If you're starting to feel some low back pain and discomfort, some shoulder, neck discomfort, which is those are kind of the top things that I hear, the hip discomfort, because it is different. Your body is kind of changing and reorienting itself to this new phase of life. So I think just being mindful of how are you moving and what is your body doing are the top things that I would look for. And like I said, I love it when our patients like to baby wear. The other thing too with the carrier, because you have to be able to use the car seat. Like that's just, I mean, you have to be able to get in and out. So training those movements. So getting a dumbbell or a kettlebell and holding it onto one side and figuring out what is happening in your own core and your posture there. Can you make those muscles work so you're not leaning over one side and doing a funky walk to get in, which it's going to happen. That's part of it because those things are very awkward to carry. But practicing some of those things before baby gets here are also can be really helpful for some people. But just being mindful of how your body is moving, I think, is number one. And just it, tuning into what you're feeling day to day, because that's going to help you understand when you're seeing shifts in your body and when we might need to make some changes or in your movement routine.
So for those moms who perhaps haven't done any of this work and are now facing, perimenopause type symptoms, maybe again having some of that bladder control difficulty. And so once they get to that point, does there become a point of no return, or is there always something that you can do in order to course correct at that point?
It is never too late to get support. The support might look a little different in the early postpartum phase than 20 years postpartum, but we've worked with so many clients who were 20, 30, 40 years postpartum and still having issues because nobody ever talked about that this wasn't a normal thing. It's common, but not necessarily normal. So there is not a point of no return. Love getting people in earlier, but honestly, if you are ready to make the change in your, or make some changes in your body or get some support, let's do it. Especially as we get into that perimenopause, menopause transition phase of life, there are so many things happening with our hormones, with our muscle density, with our muscle activation, our bone density, all of that, that need to be addressed, that play into how the pelvic floor muscles are working. And so starting that journey is when you're ready, because I think that's also the biggest thing. The best exercises, the best activities, the best plan is the one that you're actually ready and able to do consistently. We can get started right immediately postpartum, but if you don't have the capacity to actually follow through, it's not going to be as effective. So no, it's never too late. Yes, there are plenty of things that we can do, because you're right, there are a lot of women that have never had issues or have issues have resolved, especially with bladder, that resurface as we move into this new phase of the transition journey that we get to go through as women. So many fun things that we go through as women.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about exercise. So I know that, you know, you've been interested personally in lots of intense types of exercise. You know, I know that, you know, for myself, I have been gone through lots of different phases, but wasn't a heavy weightlifting at one point in time. I love to dance, so that's something I, one of my outlets. I just kind of bounce all over the place. I enjoy variety in my exercise. So is it necessary to transition the type of exercise that we are doing, particularly as we age? Or is there always something that we can do within the realm of, you know, what we're interested in, particularly when it comes to staving off injuries and things like that? What is the best approach to finding a fitness program that both is enjoyable and also works for you and your body and what stage of life you're in?
That's a great question. So weight lifting of some sort, weight bearing activities are number one, preventing things like osteopenia, osteoporosis, and maintaining muscle bulk as we age. So I always encourage women to find a way to do some kind of weightlifting, weight training. If you're not into that, if that doesn't light you up, then we need to find something that can mimic that type of activity that you enjoy. This might be a little controversial because there is certain transitions that have been recommended. My philosophy is we have to find something that you enjoy, because if you absolutely hate going to the gym and lifting weights, it's not going to be effective. It's not going to be a good stress relief. It's not going to be a good way for you to move your body. So finding things that you love to do and then supplementing with the activities that are going to support you as you age is sort of my approach to how we support our clients. I've got so many women who love Pilates and love yoga, and those are wonderful exercises. They're not necessarily weightlifting. They are really good exercise activities. I encourage them, can we incorporate one day of some type of weight training? Maybe it's a dance, weight, fitness, something or another that makes you happy and also gets that weight lifting. Or can we incorporate that into your day-to-day? Can you move boxes in your house because you're reorganizing? Finding things that you love, I think, is, to me, is a little more important than, well, at 55, you need to do this exercise only. And at 65, this is the best way. Like, I don't, or at whatever, this stage of transition, I think finding the things that you love to do. But yes, weight training is number one in my book. And it doesn't have to be high intensity. In fact, there is some research coming out that moderate intensity for women is, as we move into that perimenopause, is actually more effective with weight management. Walking is always a fantastic activity. And a lot of women, throwing on a weighted vest has been shown to be really effective for women in that perimenopause stage. So I want people to find things that they enjoy to doing and get moving in a way that makes them feel good and also helps them stay active and healthy long term.
Absolutely. So I in my former life, about 12, 13 years ago, I actually wrote a book called Mind Over Fatter, The Secret to Thinking Yourself Thin. And the funny part is that was exactly what I had suggested to people was, don't go about this by forcing yourself to exercise. Think about the things that you love to do and incorporate something that maybe is a little bit more active. Like, for example, I used to joke with taking golfing lessons at the time with a golf pro, and I said, "Why do we have to use the cart all the time? Can't we just do a few holes without the cart? Or you drive the cart for half the holes and I'll, walk or run alongside and vice versa." And so he left, but we ended up doing that and he loved it and started incorporating it into all of his other trainings because, many of the people that he was teaching could have used a little bit more physical fitness. So I think that's hugely important. Even just if you enjoy gardening, hauling a few bags of soil around is great, to be able to maintain that level of physical fitness. Absolutely. Okay, so when we get into this state of menopause, perimenopause, one of the biggest difficulties and challenges I think women have is the regulation of hormone balancing and getting to a state of, feeling comfortable because, so much of that transition becomes extremely uncomfortable for many women. So, what are some things that they might be able to do from a physical standpoint, to kind of mitigate some of that ups and downs of those hormone changes as they start to go through these transitions?
So I think finding the team of professionals that works really well for you. So finding a trainer or a physical therapist, finding a medical provider that you or a holistic provider that you align with to help you go through that transition. Because yes, from a physical standpoint, I think the biggest thing is staying moving and active. Like I said, walking is huge. It's kind of challenging sometimes in Texas heat to get out and walk 30, 45 minutes a day, but there is a reason. There's a lot of research behind that 10,000 steps, getting that movement, that kind of steady state cardio, that getting that heart rate up just a little bit. So moving in a way that feels good and that is consistent for you is huge because that does help regulate hormones a bit, right? And then finding a nutrition plan that works really well for you or for each individual person, that is something that you can follow through with. And then again, finding providers, building that team around you that can help support you in this transition, this journey, because it does take a team. I love working with other providers because we all think about things slightly different. And the way that I look at something might be a little bit different than a functional medicine provider or whoever they're working with. And that combination can be that ticket to kind of help somebody just feel like they're thriving. And that's our ultimate goal as providers, is help our patients thrive through all stages of life and not just kind of, if I just get through the next 8 to 10 years through all these perimenopause symptoms, then we'll be good to go. But why not thrive through that stage of life? So moving your body, getting a good nutrition plan, and then talking with your providers and deciding if adding additional support is important to you or going to be beneficial, I think those are kind of my top three as we go through that transition in life.
It brings up a topic that I think is relevant and that is kind of not talked about as much. We talk a lot about, physical changes, particularly relating to weight gain. But additionally, I think there's also physical changes that occur when we lose weight. That, for example, the pelvic tilt, if you have a large portion of fat, like say around the midsection, your pelvis is going to tilt differently than when you lose that. And how do we correct as you're kind of getting healthy, losing weight? How do we correct the structure to reflect what the body is doing now, as opposed to perhaps when you were doing things, with an additional 30, 40 pounds?
Yeah, you're right. When we carry, it's just like with pregnancy too, right? When you think about all that weight gain that happens in the front, it does shift your posture. That's where we can start to get low back and upper back pain and discomfort. And so when we kind of reverse that, the same process happens as what we would see in postpartum. The same process happens when we lose all that weight. It's a matter of helping the muscles and the structures kind of rebalance. So if we've got muscles that are holding a lot of tension, we need to retrain them to be able to relax and contract in an appropriate pattern to support this new weight distribution that the body has found. And so stretching, strengthening in the patterns that are going to support that muscle restructuring, I guess, or the activation of the different muscles in a different way, right, to support the body. Same concept that we talked about with baby wearing too is thinking about what is your body doing. The more in tune we can be with our body, and I think that's also the biggest thing, is every one of my clients that walks in here knows their body inside and out. You've kind of been living in it a lot longer than I have, and so I think understanding kind of what's going on and just being in tune with what you're feeling, and then we can start to systematically figure out what muscles need to be stretched, what needs to be strengthened, and we can kind of realign the body. It's really cool to watch that transition too for a lot of our patients.
So talk me through that. Somebody that's coming in to see you, what might your initial assessment look like? And then moving forward, what does the day-to-day look like as far as treatment goes, or working in on the physical fitness side of things? What does that look like?
So our clients will come in for a full head-to-toe evaluation, and I do that because you're more than just your pelvis, and there's so much involved in how our bodies move and function. And so we go through a pretty extensive medical history conversation. We talk about a lot of things that most providers maybe wouldn't dive into deeper. We talk about pelvic health. We talk about all things involved in pelvic health. And then we go through a head-to-toe assessment. So I'm looking at what does your posture look like? What does your balance look like? How are your hips and your knees and your back and your shoulders? How's your rib cage moving? I have our patients do different types of movements so we can assess all of that. And then I look at what does the muscle strength look like in each area of the body and individual muscles. And then some of our patients who are coming specifically for pelvic floor concerns, we have the option of doing a pelvic floor muscle assessment. And that is a little more in-depth assessment. It is an internal assessment of the pelvic floor muscles. It's very different than your annual gynecological exam. We're really looking at how are the muscles working together and how are the muscles in the pelvic floor working with the muscles in the hips and the diaphragm and the core. And then from there, we put together a plan based on what my clients are, their goals are, and what they want to get to, what their timeline looks like, and then what we're seeing in our evaluation and our assessments. And we determine how many sessions we think they might need and how often, and we go from there. And then day to day, our treatment sessions, most of our patients will come see us once a week to once every couple of weeks. We kind of taper off as they become more consistent and independent, or their goals change and shift. And when they come in, we'll do a combination of some hands-on treatment, so some deep tissue works, maybe some pelvic floor muscle release work if that's needed for that client. And then we get them moving. We get them doing the things they want to be able to do. And all of our sessions are one-on-one with our patient and our doctor of physical therapy, one of our doctors. And we are able to really make changes set to set, rep to rep, exercise to exercise, and based on what that patient is coming in with that day. So maybe they came in initially for bladder issues, but say they came in 1 week and their back is bothering them. So we're going to assess by what's going on with the back, how is it related to the pelvic floor muscles, and we're going to get them feeling better that day. And then at the end of our session, we usually send our patients home with a couple of exercises to incorporate into their daily activities. Like I said, the best exercise is the one that you'll actually do. And so we're going to find the couple of exercises that can be easily incorporated or thought about throughout the day so it can be consistent. Because I get it. I'm a busy mom, business owner, wife. I don't have an extra 45 minutes to do a pelvic floor physical therapy exercise session at home. So finding the things that each of our patients can do on a daily basis is going to make the most impact into their reaching their goals. So that's kind of what a plan looks like for most of our patients. And then a lot of them will transition to either our assisted stretch, our personal training. They'll work with our massage therapist on site to kind of have that holistic kind of care.
So knowing that our bodies are simply vessels and that we store things like traumas and emotions all, you know, deeply within tissues and muscles and all of these things that play a role, you know, I know you mentioned that, you know, you're more than just your pelvic floor. And I think that's so true. A lot of times what I have found is that many of the aches and pains and tensions that we experience throughout the body are related to some kind of emotion or trauma. So how important is that addressing those kinds of things in your office?
You are absolutely right. I can't tell you how many patients come in who I can tell that just by kind of watching them move or how they're holding their body, their posture, that something has changed, something else is going on. And so we do sit down and most of our sessions start with, how are things going? Tell me what's going on. And creating a space that patients feel comfortable having those conversations and understanding that they are supported. So being able to talk about if they want to share any emotional, any other stressors, that is one of the things we talk about in our initial evaluation is, what kind of stressors do you have going on? And is there anything, have you dealt with anything in the past that we need to be aware of and you want to share with us today? But in a very supportive way, not in a way that we can kind of help guide that patient. A lot of us hold tension in our shoulders and our neck and in our pelvis and our pelvic floor. That's where a lot of our trauma tends to be stored. And so we do have to work through the emotional aspect of it. And so some of our sessions might look like just a deep pelvic floor meditation, like just connecting with our pelvic floors and connecting with our bodies and breath work. That might be the majority of one of our sessions if a client is going through a lot of things, because we're not going to move to that next stage of being able to exercise and make those muscles work if we haven't been able to get in touch with those muscles and tissues. So that does get incorporated into our sessions as needed and as appropriate with our patients. And then sometimes we, like I said, building that team of professionals and providers, I think, is also really important. So we have a ton of community partnerships and people that we work with. If we feel like it's something is kind of outside of our scope of practice, we're going to talk with our patient and help them find other providers to help support them on their journey, because it takes a village. And I think it's so important to help people find what's going to work for them, because everybody is different. I might have five people come in with the exact same diagnosis on paper. Their plan is going to look 100% different because their goals are different. Their history is different. They're a different person. And I think finding that unique plan of care for each person is so crucial.
Absolutely. And I know for many women, you know, years ago, I also worked with a local birth and baby resource network, and a lot of women felt very traumatized by the birth process itself. You know, whether that be because, you know, maybe they didn't have the support from their medical providers that they were looking for, maybe something occurred in the hospital that was very frightening to them. Maybe it had to do with their partner or somebody else who was not supportive in that particular scenario, whatever it might be, but many women really did feel a lot of trauma throughout that birthing process. So I do think it's really important to think about and to consider, you know, how much of this is stemming from holding on to those emotions and those traumas in the body, particularly in the pelvic floor, which is so sensitive, you know, for women particularly, because they, you know, go through this wonderful process called childbirth, which, oh man, if men only knew half the things we go through. Absolutely. All right. So what about, are there any, you know, top tips for any woman of any age? What can we do to strengthen our entire vitality? So whether it be pelvic floor or breath work or posture, any of those kinds of things, what would you say are the top tips for keeping yourself in a more healthful state or moving towards health?
I think breathing and posture are my top, but also having some type of mindfulness, prayer, meditation practice, whether that's 3, 5 minutes, but just a way to connect to yourself and your body. Because if you're trying to move your body, but you aren't able to connect with the muscles and the tissues that you're trying to strengthen, it's going to be very challenging. So mindfulness is always at the top of my list, whatever that practice looks like for you. And then, like I said, breathing and posture are crucial, because the more we can connect with our breath, the more you connect with your core muscles, the more you can move in a state and move in and out of ways, right? When your kid is running out into the middle of the street, you need to be able to move quickly, but you need to be able to move quickly without injuring yourself. So we need to explore and do things a little bit differently. You need to explore movement in all kinds of different ways. So the more you can connect with your body and your breath and your posture and movement patterns, the easier it's going to be for you to get in those positions that maybe felt somewhat impossible a year or two ago. So I think just finding ways to connect with your body, and also understanding that taking care of yourself is not selfish. It's actually giving to everyone else around you. Take the time to actually pour into yourself, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to support those around you. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that as women. We care for everyone else around us and forget that we're people too. So take the time to care for yourself every day and find something that lights you up.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Nicole, we have reached the amazing rapid fire questions. I ask these of all of our guests. These questions are designed to help us give a little bit more insight into who you are and what makes you tick, and perhaps what lights you up. So, all right. Number one, if you could choose only one natural remedy for the rest of your life, what would that be?
I would say nutrition. So food is so powerful. Food is kind of the basis for all of our other medications down the road too. So I think if we can have a foundation of nutrition, that would be my number one. I mean, movement too, but I think nutrition, you have to be fueled well to move well.
Absolutely. Tell us something most people don't know about you.
So I was a competitive gymnast growing up. I competed for about 7, 8 years until I got into high school. And I really enjoy crocheting, which is a new hobby that I've picked up in the last year. So most people don't know that about me yet.
Awesome. If I were to compile a playlist of happy music, what song would you suggest be added?
So it took me a while to think about this one, but the Don't Worry, Be Happy song, I think, just always makes me feel happy after I listen to it.
Nice. And what's your favorite guilty pleasure?
I like to watch terrible TV shows. My husband comes in and says, this is awful. The acting is awful. The storyline is awful. But it fills me up. It's something I don't have to think about and I can enjoy. And so terrible TV.
Awesome. What's the most influential book you've ever read?
So I really liked the You Are a Badass series by Jen Sincero. I think it kind of helps you think about things in a different way. And that was very eye-opening for me. In fact, I'm rereading some of those books, and I rarely reread books. So that was, I think, shows how good that series is.
Nice. All right. What does the word revolution mean to you?
So to me, revolution means stepping outside of the norm, kind of doing something different, thinking about things outside of the mainstream, and being a bit of a disruptor in the best possible way, trying to help people understand things just a little bit differently, because why not?
Absolutely. What does the word remedy mean to you?
Means finding a solution that works for you, or finding a path forward for whatever may ail you. And so, yeah, finding solutions.
And lastly, if you could impart one piece of wisdom onto our listeners, what would that be?
So, like I said earlier, you understand your body better than anybody else, and don't forget that. And think about listening to your body, listen to your intuition. When you feel like something is maybe not quite right or not going the way that you want it to, there's a reason. You've been living in your body a whole lot longer than anybody else. And so trust that and understand that you are unique, and any of your plans of care or your remedies or your solutions need to be unique, just like you.
Awesome. And where can people connect with you, Dr. Nicole Laird?
So we have our website. It's hayescountypt.com, HAYS countypt.com. And then we are also on Instagram, Facebook at Hayes County PT. And I'd love to connect with you that way.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. It has really been a pleasure. For all of you listening, if you enjoyed this episode, if you received any kind of value, any tidbit that you would like to share with your fellow women in particular, please do so. Please share. Please like. Please go to our Instagram at Remedy Revolution Podcast. We are unfortunately being censored to the highest degree because of some of our guests, unfortunately. And so it really does. Does make a huge difference. Anything you can do, it doesn't cost you a dime, and it really does help us tremendously. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Nicole Laird. It has been a pleasure. Thank y'all for listening. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Remedy Revolution is here for you.